This is the Small Group Bible Study, How Then Shall We Now Live? We're into study number 3. It's based on Romans chapter 13, verses 9 to 10. It's the continuation of building a covenant community, which is based on Romans chapter 12, verses 9 to 21. As I usually do, I suggest that you start the evening with some kind of informal ice-breaking exercise, which could just simply be providing tea, coffee, cold drinks, snacks, and it just lets people chat. And then once that part of the, which is an important component to the evening, once that has finished, and if you're meeting in a cafe or something like that, then everyone's ordered their food and drinks. You might be sitting around a table in a cafe. Then ask the two questions that we ask. And I think this is where people can begin to share what's happening in their world, what's happening in their lives. And the two questions that I recommend asking are simply this. Number one, please name one thing that you're thankful for since we last met. And secondly, what's one thing you would like us to pray for? And I've got a template sheet on the website. You can download that. It's just a very simple thing. You just put their name down and put their thankful point, put their prayer point. And then at the end of the night, you're going to remind people, you know, Harry was thankful for this, but he would like prayer for this. And I think being thankful helps people to reorientate toward a positive mental attitude. We live in a world where there's enough that's dragging people down, and being thankful is a great antidote to what's happening in the world generally. Well, this study, How Then Shall We Now Live? And it's the third part of that, Be Pure, based on Romans chapter 13, verses 9 and 10. So let's have a look at this. The opening paragraph, which I would recommend, invite someone to read it. Invite someone in the group. You know, if you've moved from, if you are meeting in a home and you've moved from the home into a lounge room, or you're sitting around a dining table, whatever that change of scenery is, invite someone. Hey, Sue, could you just read that first paragraph? And this is what it says. There seems to be a great amount of confusion among Christians about the place of the Ten Commandments within the New Covenant. On the one hand, the New Testament is clear that the New Covenant is about grace and not law. And that's based on Romans chapter 3, verse 28, which says, for we hold that one is justified by faith apart from the works of the law. And Romans chapter 4, verse 16, this is why it depends on faith, in order that the promise may rest on grace and be guaranteed to all his offspring, not only to the adherent of the law, but also to the one who shares the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. Yet in the Old Testament, we read that the law was given through Moses, and it was to be an everlasting, it was to be everlasting and forever. So an example of this is found in Exodus chapter 31, verse 16, where it says, therefore, the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. So this could be quite confusing for someone, especially a new Christian. They're reading through the Old Testament. They're reading verses like this. But it's balanced out by things like Hebrews chapter 8, verse 13, which says, in speaking of a new covenant, he makes the first one, that is the Old Testament, obsolete. And what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. So Hebrews 8:13, which we've just read, states that the Old Covenant was made obsolete when Christ established the New Covenant. Yet there are entire denominations within Christianity based upon the central place of the Ten Commandments, and particularly keeping the Sabbath. It is worth understanding that there were different categories of law under the Old Covenant. Now, these include moral laws, civil laws, ceremonial laws, and food laws. Here's the first question. Question number one. What place do the food laws have in the New Covenant based on Mark chapter 7, verses 18 to 19, which says this, and he, that's Jesus, said to them, then you also, then are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile them, since it enters not his heart, but his stomach, and is expelled? Thus, he declared, this is in parenthesis, thus he declared all foods clean, says Mark. And so what place does the food laws of the Old Covenant have on the New Covenant believer? Well, the Christian, hopefully your discussion there will land somewhere near this. The Christian is not morally bound by them. However, many Christians will treat them as healthy dietary advice. So I'm not sure how many people would want to go and eat a camel anyway, but Bear Grylls certainly does. All right, question number two. What place do the ceremonial laws, that is the instructions to the Old Covenant priests, have in the New Covenant according to Hebrews chapter 8 verses 6 and 7, which says, "But as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry that is much more excellent than the old, as the covenant he mediates is better, since it is enacted on better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a second." In other words, it's really making the point that the old covenant has been done away with, including those ceremonial aspects of it, the instructions to the priests involving sacrifices and feasts and ceremonies and so on. So those things have no place. So to be morally pure doesn't require keeping the ceremonial, Levitical, Mosaic aspects of the law. All right, Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 13. This is the last paragraph on page 7, which again, you might say, Bob, could you just read through that last paragraph? And while he does, Fred, could you just look up Deuteronomy 23, verse 13? Now, Deuteronomy 23, 13 is an example of one of Israel's civil laws. Now, civil laws are those laws which give rules for a civilized society. They are usually designated for a people's welfare. Civil laws often vary from country to country and sometimes from state to state. Over time, some cultures even develop unwritten rules which everyone is expected to keep, and these are generally known as conventions. So hopefully Bob or whoever I said will grab Deuteronomy 23:13, and you'll have a bit of a laugh at this one. If you really want to know what it says, it says, and you shall have a trowel with your tools, and when you sit down outside, you shall dig a hole with it and turn back and cover up your excrement. So as you can see, there's some very, very practical aspects to the civil laws, apart from some of the civil laws where, you know, if you see your neighbor's ox wandering, take it back, that kind of thing. These are civil laws that country by country, state by state, they will vary. And then, of course, there's those unwritten rules of civilized society, which are generally known as conventions. All right, question three. In Matthew chapter 15, verses 1 to 2, which says, "Then Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, 'Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat.'" Now, we see an example where the Pharisees asked Jesus why his disciples broke one of these traditions, or what we have referred to as conventions. So how did Christ respond to that? So it's just important to recognize that these things are not on the same footing as the moral laws. And that's kind of where I hope people are going to realize we're landing here, that these things are not binding. They're not morally binding. Okay, so Matthew chapter 15, verses 3 to 20, Jesus responds, he answered them, "And why do you break the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition?" And he goes on and says, "For God commanded, 'Honor your father and your mother, and whoever reviles father or mother must surely die.'" And he goes on, and he basically says that you have put your own traditions, your own conventions above the commandments of God. And this is, you know, something Jesus said, your commandments, your traditions, your conventions have no place in the Christian's moral responsibility before God. All right, so again, the first paragraph on page 8, you might say, Sally, could you just read that? Which says this: Christ's response to the Pharisees makes an important point about the moral laws of the Old Covenant. Morality is the measure of right and wrong conduct compared to the natural law which God has written on every human heart. Now that's Romans chapter 2, verses 14 to 15, which says, "For when Gentiles who do not have the law by nature do what the law requires, they are a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them." All right, the point here, this natural law written on human hearts, the point we draw from Christ's response to the Pharisees is this: when an old covenant moral law is reiterated in the New Testament, it is binding on the follower of Christ. All but one of the Ten Commandments are reiterated in the New Testament. All right, so now we're going to discover which of those 10 are not reiterated. So question 4, read Matthew chapter 12, verses 1 to 8, which says, "At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, 'Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath.' He said to them, 'Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests? Or have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." So in there, note which of the Ten Commandments is not only not reiterated in the New Testament, and that is, it's the Sabbath, but also note how Christ claimed it was no longer applicable to his disciples. So that the laws associated with the Sabbath that had been really added to by the scribes and Pharisees, Christ said, "You've missed the point. The Sabbath was meant to be this. It was meant for your welfare. It wasn't meant to be a religious thing done as a legal thing. It was meant to be for your own benefit." So it has been, anyway, this might lead to a healthy discussion as you put it out there. And I think people are hopefully going to respond in a similar way to the food laws, that, okay, we're not obligated to keep this, and we're not going to lose our salvation because of it. But at the same time, it's fair enough to say that because we have these things in the Bible, we can draw principles or guidelines from them as well. Right, it's been noted that 6 of the 10 commandments pertain to our relationship with God, and 4 pertain to our relationship with others. Note the 4 commandments which Paul selected in Romans chapter 13, verse 9, and how he summed these particular 4 of the 10 up with just one command. So we read in Romans chapter 13, verse 9, this, where Paul says, "For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." So what's the one command that Paul summed up those aspects? Well, it's about love. So adultery, stealing, murder, coveting, he summed them all up with love your neighbor as yourself. In other words, love your neighbor in a positive way, the way you would want to be loved. Now, each of these 4 commandments which Paul refers to affects how we treat others. We live in a world where the vulnerable are exploited and are harmed as a result. So here's the contemplating question. Question 6. How would our society look if just these four commands were commonly obeyed, and in brackets I've got here in parentheses, never underestimate the power of the gospel to transform a life. You know, the gospel gives people the willpower to obey God. And even in these areas, it gives people the willpower. Without the regeneration of the Holy Spirit that comes by the invitation of the gospel, people don't even have the necessary willpower to resist the temptations that lead to some of the most heinous sins. Anyway, hope that provokes a really good, healthy discussion. As group leader, take those prayer points that the group opened up with at the start of the night, remind people of them, go around the circle of those present, starting on your left so you can finish when it comes back to you. That way you can mop up any missed prayer points. All right, God bless you. I trust that you're finding these studies beneficial. If so, send us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. God bless. I'm Andrew Corbett.